This is all very odd. I have to say, I've not seen James. We've not worked together for, I guess, about 5 years, I think. I left LBC.
Yes.
I left LBC. It's my choice. I got out before they booted me out. No, I did get out before he booted me out.
It's true. Well, they wouldn't have booted you out, necessarily.
They wouldn't have renewed the contract when it got taken over and became kind of newsy.
Right.
What have you. It did. But the last time I saw you was about 3 years ago at Piccadilly Circus.
Correct. And so, we hugged in a manly fashion. And it's lovely to see you again. It's been far too long.
How you doing? You're right.
Yeah, I'm great. This is what they want, isn't it?
Just two middle-aged men having a chat. Okay, well, I guess the thing is, I don't know your background and how you got into radio. I heard there that you depped for Sandy. And that's always the key thing, is when you're off on holiday, you always want someone who's not as good or significantly worse than you to fill in, because it means your job is your job. So last time I was off, James Whale filled in for me, so I knew my job was safe.
Sound as a pound.
How did you get into it?
Well, hang on. First of all, my best ever was Frank Dobson. You remember the Labour MP, former mayoral candidate, and the producer at the time was having to write everything on the screens. They got Anne Widdecombe in for a week, and then for reasons of balance, they had to get a Labour bloke in for the next week, and they all said no, so we ended up with Frank Dobson. And they're writing every single word for him on the screen, so it is, and remember the number is 0845 606 0973. Today we're asking, how do you feel about the future of trade? Would you like a cup of tea, Frank? Oh, no, sorry. True story. I got into it by accident. I always wanted to be a newspaper journalist, and I became one, and it was a bit rubbish, to be honest. I was show business editor of the Daily Express. I was dying of liver failure and hating the pressure of the newsroom. And they launched a program on Channel 5. It was owned by the same media empire, called The Right Stuff, which is still on, I think. And I went to do that instead. And then that fell to pieces after about a year and a bit. I moved back to London. I was about to go back into newspapers, and I was doing Five News with Kirsty Young. I met Sandy Walsh. She very kindly suggested that I ring her boss at the time and offer myself for some swing, because they needed some swing. I actually haven't left yet.
Was there a bit of you, when you went from kind of doing TV and stuff like that, and radio popped up, you thought, oh, that's a step backwards?
Into radio?
Yeah, because there's kind of there's perceived snobbery, I think, in certain areas of the industry.
I thought we were going to save the tougher questions for the second half.
Sorry.
I remember I was on Channel 5.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, backwards is a sort of a redundant concept. I know what you mean, but I've never really... luckily, I've always sort of enjoyed it so much that I haven't worried. I find the times you worry more about status are the times you end up doing jobs you don't enjoy very much because you're doing them for all the wrong reasons. What about you? Because you started on television.
Well, I started on radio before TV. I was doing a local radio station in Milton Keynes for 6 months. I was a stand-up comic, and I got this gig. I was Ian in Black Thunder, where I had to drive around in a black Jeep around Milton Keynes, giving out fivers to people. To really ungrateful, horrible people. It's a fiver. Oh, is that all? Yeah. Could you sound a bit enthusiastic? Oh, fucking all right then. So I did that, and I hated it. I hated it with a passion. I found it really, really soulless. And by luck, I kind of found my way onto TV. I found my way, ended up literally by luck, doing this thing called the 11 o'clock show and various other things like that. And so I got into radio properly because of TV. So when young people say to me, how did you get into radio? I say, well, I got a thrice weekly topical comedy show, and then radio doors kind of opened, as they did at the time. That, you know, if you were on TV then, they would say, do you fancy coming and doing a radio show? So I went to XFM for a little bit. And I never saw it as anything more than a hobby, you know. And they offered me the XFM breakfast show, and I didn't fancy it, and I was kind of a bit cocky and a bit arrogant. And then the TV work dried up. And this is why I asked you the question, because the TV work dried up, and I didn't work. I did a breakfast show for Channel 4 called Rise that lasted for a year. No one watched it, but it was fun. But no one watched it. And then I didn't work for 8 months after that, didn't get any work. And I got offered 2 weeks' cover at LBC, filling in for Clive Bull. And part of me thought, yeah, okay, I suppose. You know, I did, and I'm embarrassed to say it now, but this is where I was at the time. I looked at it as a step backwards. It was a great honour to fill in for Clive Ball, because I'm a huge fan of Clive, and, the man's a legend. But part of me did think, oh, God, I'm going to radio, of all places. But I'm glad I did.
I know exactly what you mean. The only odd thing about that is, what sort of person would be young and have the ambition to be a radio phone-in host? Who I mean,
Yeah.
It's perfectly normal to have the ambitions to actually want to be a radio host. I think you should end up doing it by accident, because that means you've come down a path that is different from everybody else's and there's unexpected turns.
It's not a proper... I don't think it's a proper job.
No, nor does my wife.
But it's an odd thing. And I, to be honest, I hadn't listened to you for a long, long time, because I've been listening to other things. I'm being... Because I thought you were terribly pompous and self-righteous. No, I didn't listen for a while. And then about 6 months ago, before I knew we were doing this, by coincidence, I just started listening to you again, because a friend of mine, Scott, kept banging on about how good you were.
Bless him.
And I did, and I kept listening again, and then I found out we were doing this. But it's an odd job, isn't it?
Yes.
For 3 hours a day to go in and kind of put yourself up on a parapet and allow, you know, expose yourself and your politics slightly. There's a little bit of gameplay in it, and maybe we'll talk about that in a bit, but... You're inviting people to come and have a go at you,
yeah,
if they think they're hard enough,
yeah,
basically,
can't.
For 3 hours. Yeah, how do you get your head around that?
I mean, that's always been part of my act, but when we worked together, yours wasn't really like that. You were inviting people to come and have fun with you.
Yeah.
And they can be very similar phenomena, those two things. You're right, there was a pomposity, and there probably still is an unnecessary aggression, which is a result of the adrenaline and the fear that you described. Sometimes it's a fight or flight syndrome. So if someone's having a pop at you, you really shouldn't destroy them as a result, unless it's some Burke from UKIP, in which case the quicker... But you don't need to use the sledgehammer. I've found that the odd bit of the job. In as each year has passed, I've tried to be a little bit nicer, and as I've become a little bit nicer, the negative side, the frightening bits of the job have diminished a bit. So now the only real fear, and you probably don't get this as much because a breakfast show is more produced, there's more furniture in the schedule. I just frightened of nothing happening. I don't really have anything between 10 and 1 except me and the microphone and the phone line. So the days when the phones don't ring are the only really scary moments.
But can I ask a question about this morning's? Were you struggling a bit the first hour to get phone calls? You're talking about the teachers.
No, I was struggling to get people to disagree with me.
Right, okay, right.
I had a switchboard full of people who were happy to agree with me.
Which isn't particularly good radio.
Cheers.
No, but
pays the bills.
No, but I find personally that an hour of people phoning up saying, yeah, I agree with what you're saying, great show, keep up the good work.
Absolutely.
As a listener, it doesn't work.
Well, which is where the struggle came in.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Would you say so? Would you say I'm not getting the calls I need? Because that's something I wouldn't have done a few years ago, but I'll do it now.
Yeah. You've always had that
irreverence, so that almost that maverick's an overused word, but you never really played when we worked together. You didn't play by the rules that the rest of us were obeying, which is why you got magic moments that the rest of us couldn't really hope to.
But there were also stinky moments as well. Because
I don't think you can have one without the.
Yeah,
other.
you've got to have the extremes. But what I'm learning. If you never heard the show I did at LBC and then at kind of Absolute to a certain extent, it was Scott Solder, when he was there, gave me the best advice. I'd go in there every week and we'd look through the papers, me and my producer. And after 3 months, Scott said, I don't want you to look at the papers. I want you to come in and talk about what's going on for you. And I remember thinking, oh, it was ridiculous. It's the best advice he could have given me, because it then helped me kind of go off and develop my own style and take bits from Danny Baker and Tommy Boyd and all these people. But kind of, who are we laughing at? Tommy Boyd or Danny Baker? I nicked acts from both of them, so it don't really matter. But and kind of go off in sort of my own direction. And what I'm trying to do now, I'm doing a BBC phone-in show, is I'm kind of trying to pull that back a little bit.
Because you went all in, you were quite scorched earth about not going near the news. You became the sort of...
The anti-news.
Which worked with that management, but it wouldn't work with all management. Some of us had to be a little bit more adaptive.
It was an act, and this is the thing that I couldn't do.
This is
another reason why I respect Clive Ball, because Clive Ball can do any style of radio.
Turn on a sixpence.
Totally. He can do the...
But you clearly can now as well. So what have been the big learning experiences from being effectively... How would you describe it? You were in charge of the Maypole, and you were... choosing who danced around it. I am available for North Norfolk Digital later as well. But when you're doing a breakfast show, and you're clearly doing something right if you're picking up awards like the Nick Clark.
Yeah.
I mean, when we worked together, you'd have been more likely to win the Nick E. Clark Award, I think. So what's been...
It's weird. It's like it's like being in your radio show. This is like my dream come true.
Ditto.
What's
been
changed?
The big changes and challenges? Because I think you'll agree. At one point, you would have said, no, I don't want to be newsy at all.
Oh, completely. Mm. And I'm at BBC 3. Three Counties Radio now. And my joke, apparently, I'd forgotten about this about 2 years ago, Absolute, was, oh God, the way things are going, I'm going to be doing breakfast at BBC Three Counties Radio. That was kind of my thing. What, I tell you what's changed. I turned 40, I got a mortgage, I got two kids.
Yeah.
And I started to realise that the act that I was doing wasn't particularly sustainable. I had kind of explored all the avenues within it that I felt I wanted to explore and could explore. And I felt for the last 18 months, Absolute, I was there 4 years, three or four years. The last 18 months, I wasn't enjoying it. I was hating it.
Because
really? Because I felt I was just doing the same old tricks up my sleeve of not talking and letting the people argue together, or having recordings of Verinda playing. I was doing the same old things again and again and again, and it wasn't challenging. So then the challenge for me then became to kind of go and do a straighter show, and to go and do the news, and go and be, kind of give it the gravitas that people struggled to associate.
But without
with
losing your
without
levity and I lost sense of mischief.
I lost it a bit.
Did you?
And now I did lose it a bit. I mean, I've been at 3CR for, well, I don't know, 18 months or something like that. I lost it a bit. And now with Catherine, who is my producer now, it's she's kind of got it back out. So we got the balance right of dicking around,
yes,
and having fun, but also, you know, talking about quite serious, yes, stuff and having people.
Do you like talking about serious stuff?
If I'm interested in it. The, yeah, thing I can't fake is interest. Yes, so if I'm doing a story about, I'm trying to think of an example.
Traffic.
Potholes is always planning. The one. Jesus.
Yeah.
We get so many emails. Why don't you talk about the potholes in Milton Keynes? Because it's really, really boring,
yeah,
radio.
Exactly.
And we'll get loads of calls about it, but that doesn't necessarily guarantee.
Now, that's an interesting point, isn't it? Because, yeah, that's something I learned from Clive Bull, the difference between quality and quantity. Clive always used to have a saying that if you want to make the phones ring, we have a screen, most of you probably know this, but there's a screen in the studio where you see the phone lines, you see whether they're lit up or not. Clive would say, if you want to make the phones ring, just ask if there's anybody old out there feeling poorly.
He's right.
And you hear presenters doing variations on that theme, yeah, not just you know, but everywhere, right up to Five Live. And the other one is not either potholes or have you ever had a parking ticket that was really unfair? And you could do 3 hours straight. I could do that every day, all day, for 3 hours. But the only people listening would be the people phoning in and the people waiting to phone in.
I refuse to do. Should we bring back hanging? Should we legalise cannabis and sweets? Stroke toys? Stroke old programmes from the '70s? I refuse to do it because you're right. You're
but
guaranteed.
You've done them all. No, you must have done old sweets. Texan bar spangles.
No,
nothing.
No, haven't wagon wheels got smaller? Hands are bigger.
See, I won't do. Hanging bores me rigid, but I actually happen to feel quite passionately about the legalisation of cannabis. So I go into that from a position of quite deep sincerity and, yeah, honesty. If it was fox hunting, I have fun, yeah, with. But the hardy perennials, abortion would be the one I hate doing for the sort of
right.
Same reason.
Well, who are your favourite kinds of callers?
I don't really have one. I've been thinking about this. I think sometimes the best callers take you by surprise. And part of this journey of trying to be a little bit less bumptious in the studio has involved me not arriving at a conclusion about a caller after 30 seconds. So there was a time when if they... Like your man there. Yeah. If someone who doesn't sound very articulate, who is struggling with... sort of expressing himself is being run rings around by a bright presenter. I would have at one point I'd have been going, oh, get him on, get me someone clever. But life's not like that, is it? And you've got to give people a little bit of room, and then if they still get on your wick, then sack them off immediately. But my favourite callers are probably, at risk of sounding a bit glib, are probably the ones that tell me something I didn't know before. What are your favourite callers?
Racists.
Oh, of course. I forgot about racists. Actually, yes.
I love a good racist because you haven't got to do anything with them. They do it all for you. My favourite one was at LBC. And they do, and it sounds a cliche, I'm not a racist, but.
Yeah, they say it.
I'm not a racist, but all black postmen are rubbish.
You had that actual line?
That was at LBC, yeah.
That's fantastic.
I said, why is that? Yeah. Well, they got different numbers over there, haven't they? And the thing is, when you're presented with that, it makes it easy for me because I haven't got to do anything. He's done it all himself.
In a way, that when I said callers that tell you something you didn't know already, I was being a bit arch probably.
Yeah.
But that is the same sort of thing. It's the caller who just takes you completely by surprise. And the nastier their starting point is, the more it would be homophobes. If I had to pick between the racist and the homophobe, for me, because I was brought up by... well, not by monks, but I was taught by monks, so I know the Bible inside out. So I like the religious homophobes.
Yeah.
Because
you, oh, yeah, I've heard you do this. You're good, because you can quote the Bible back.
I know the Bible backwards, which makes me a Satanist. And I like that, because as with the racists, that sense of certainty is wonderful, but you shouldn't have much. And if you're certain that gay people or people of a different ethnicity are somehow inferior or wrong or disgusting, you deserve to get your head kicked in. So yeah, I like those.
The thing that I've only started to really learn in the last year is to distance myself from the argument. Even as recently as a year ago, I would get angry with what the... I remember getting angry with one of the PCCs, the Bedfordshire PCC. He was just really annoying me. I got angry. And I'm still learning how to kind of distance myself.
It's not easy.
You seem to do it quite well,
really?
Though. I think so.
I've got better, but I mean, they've been... I've been shaken after...
How do you allow that to go into the conversation, or do you manage to let the barriers come down?
Did you remember Brian Coleman, who used to run the London Fire Emergency and Planning Authority?
Yes.
I did an interview with him that was it was sort of mildly significant in the great scheme of things, and I was bloody furious with that man. I thought he was disgusting and despicable. And 10 minutes into the interview, I realised that was coming across. And I don't know if it was a sort of Damascene moment, but I do remember consciously thinking, "You're going to lose your audience if you keep being horrible to him."
Mm.
So just sit on your anger and put him on a slow boil rather than on a sort of high roast. So yeah, it has to, like you say, it's conscious, isn't it? You catch yourself not liking yourself very much, even if you're on a perfectly righteous journey. You just sound like a bit of a dick. So
you can sound like a dick. And
thank you.
But I mean, yesterday I was talking to some NUT guy about the strike, and I tend not to particularly... You wear your politics on your sleeve a little bit more than I do, and I tend not to. But actually, I support everyone's right to strike, and I probably support the teacher strike, if I'm completely honest about it. But this guy from the NUT was so argumentative and so... reading from the script. I hate it when... So he didn't actually do this, but I hate it when people come on, go, "Right, Steve, so tell me your point of view."
Yeah.
"Well, first of all, Ian, I just want to thank you for the opportunity." You've been on the PR training course, all right. And he was just reading from this script, and he wouldn't answer the simple yes or no question. And I got really pissed off with him.
Yeah, fair enough.
To the point where actually... I probably came off looking worse because
you
think I was
so because if the listener shared your frustration, I think sometimes you've just got to get angry at the right time.
Yeah, I don't think I timed it that well that time. I think I played.
If he was
a bad
being
hand.
An absolute plum, then the listener would probably want you to. I did one today as well. Well, it was on the teacher strike, but with callers, because what you've just described is part of the reason why I don't have many guests on my show, because you can't tell them, really. You get into trouble if you tell Ian Duncan Smith to jog on for being a...
Who is it who won't come on your show? Boris Johnson?
Boris Johnson and Ian Duncan Smith. And it was a caller at the end who was just being an idiot, and I caught the old sort of nastiness coming out, and I sat back and I didn't sit on it. And then the Twitters and the emails started coming through, and they were 100% positive. And I thought, it's because if you do it all the time, people don't like it. But if you choose your moment, don't you think? If you choose your moments, you get angry with...
But you're right. And the thing that I've learned, and the thing that you're great at doing is, again, Clive Bull is a master at this, is being quiet. You can sometimes be quiet.
Didn't used to be. Do you know you're like that? You used to be silent for hours sometimes.
Yeah, but that was because I was normally wrestling. Do you remember I used to wrestle Agent Chris? The only time I ever swore on air, when we used to run out of content, which was quite regularly, is I would wrestle my producer, Agent Chris. And we were having a wrestling match. And this was going out on the air. And it went on for ages. And we were so tired. At the end of it, I went, "Oh, man, I'm so fucked." And Lady Alex was there, who's a bloke, and was a tech op. And he just went, "Oh, you've sworn," and he hit the dump button. And it's the only time I've ever sworn. We haven't got... Here's a little tip for you, radio fans. BBC... Yes, I'm going to tell... Yes. BBC Local Radio doesn't have a 7-second delay.
Really?
Oh, it doesn't have a 7-second...
Really?
James Max got caught out the other day. Have you heard that clip?
No.
James Max talking about Boris Johnson, 4 o'clock in the morning. So what do you think about Boris Johnson there? Well, to be honest, I think he's a right...
And he, no, yeah, really?
And it went out, yeah.
I'll dig that out.
James
Whale got caught out recently as well.
With his own potty mouth.
Yes, knowing the mic had gone down. This was interesting about the BBC, just in how the industry has changed, rather than the phone-in in particular. But there was a cult, I choose my word very carefully, yes. If we haven't got a dumb button. The cult of the presenter had got out of control, as recent court cases may have even suggested. But when we came into it, you were still treated like minor royalty. And I was still part of that culture. And the wake-up call for me was when James Whale started swearing at his producer because she hadn't turned the microphone off to go to the travel at BBC Essex, I think.
Yeah.
And James is a great broadcaster. He's one of the first phone-in hosts that I listened to. But he did that. And we all at LBC, when we heard it, we were all going, oh, God. I wouldn't want to be that producer getting a kicking off. But of course, what the management did was make sure she was okay.
Yeah.
Of course that's what the management should do. But that was quite a moment, again, part of this midlife crisis that I'm undergoing, of recognizing that when you hit 40, you can't carry on like the previous 20 years. You've got to change with the times for the next 20 years. And you realize that actually, the way you are on air and the way you are off air are probably inextricably linked, and people don't want necessarily to be monstered anymore by phone-in hosts.
No, I think a couple of things. LBC's gone national in the last month, 6 weeks, something like that. Have you noticed a change in terms of who's calling in or getting in touch?
Not really, no. And I'd have been surprised if we did. I've got a busy switchboard every day. Apart from
all right,
20 minutes,
so,
20 minutes.
This,
but
people phone me as well.
Yeah, but we've always taken calls from all over. So but they haven't rolled it out in a big way. They haven't gone right now. You've got to do something that's relevant to it. So we're just carrying on, and people need a little bit of encouragement to ring in. Is there a difference between the callers you get now and the callers you get? Could you say that's an Absolute caller? That's an LBC caller? That's a Three Counties Radio caller?
Yeah, in the age demographic, Absolute. The reason it stopped being quite so challenging was it was mainly blokes between 15 and 45.
Yeah,
that was kind of the audience, and there. There's no skill in winding those people up because they're dumb. What was so great at LBC, when I got the job at LBC, it was David Lloyd and Scott Solder. And they said to me, the LBC audience, when was this? This was 9 years ago. The LBC audience is basically old Jewish women, and the audience is dying off. It's literally dying off. You know, it was women in their 70s and their 80s. No disrespect to that group of people at all, but they wanted to try and make it hip and young, man, so they got a 35-year-old bloke to come in and do it. And it was a real challenge, and I enjoyed the challenge of winding those people up, of giving them something. They thought they were hearing something they weren't actually hearing. So I would go on and say, right, guys, we should let all 13-year-old children smoke cigarettes so that they know what smoking is like, and we should close down libraries and turn them into Blockbusters. Anna Rayburn hated that one. She hated that one. Nana Rayburn. There's a woman. And it was kind of fun winding up. Now, local radio, BBC audience, it's weird because local BBC radio, we were talking about snobbery earlier on, there is kind of a snobbery.
Yeah.
People look down on it and think it's a little bit naff. I did a few years ago myself. So it's kind of a challenge to try and get people to realise that this isn't your average BBC local radio breakfast show.
Yeah.
You know, we're not doing Beat the Intro or Battle of the Sexes or any of that kind of stuff. There's a little bit more to it than that. It's still an older audience. I think my show kind of works on two levels. The kids can dig it, you know, the 20-year-old or 30-year-olds can get it. But then also, I think the older people, the 60s, 70s, they kind of get it as well.
They have to, in a way, don't they?
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like not being in on a joke, and that must be a tough
But listen. People, you've been there for so long that people trust you, don't they? The people have to trust you.
Yeah,
do you find them telling you stuff
say.
That they perhaps wouldn't tell another
They do
presenter?
Now, yeah. They do now. Some of the... I mean, it's a miracle to me. I've never won any awards. But those are the calls that
did
stick...
Did you not win a Sony?
I got only a bronze. They stick in my mind. The people who tell you about being abused.
Yeah.
The people... we're among friends, so it's not that difficult to get someone to tell you something intimate. But the people who trust you wouldn't tell anyone. So when I hear other fresher, newer presenters perhaps thinking they've got a call, I do find myself registering that I've heard that story three times with three different presenters. Mm. And I'm not interested in that. And I don't think the listener is. There's a sort of magic of sincerity and originality that you can't fake. So, yeah, I mean, we took a call recently from a guy who, in the course of our conversation about honour killing, had decided, he said, and we had no reason to doubt him, the police got involved afterwards, he said that our phone-in had persuaded him not to order the honour killing of his daughter in India. And he wouldn't have rung me when I was 2 years into the job. Yeah. And similarly, you know, there was a lad when the Savile stuff first broke, and we were talking about why does it take you so long to come forward. There was a lad who rang in who was very street, is the word I would use. I don't know if that's still apt or relevant. He was very street and very tough and macho. And he started howling down the phone at me about abuse that his uncle had visited upon him when he was a young boy in Jamaica. He actually started howling down the phone. And he's never rung the station before or since. So, yeah, trust. And it's interesting you mentioned timing, because you can't do that in a year or 2 years. 10 years I've been doing this job now. I still feel like a new boy. But, yeah, I think trust is quite a special thing, and it's worth aiming for.
And you develop, because some people might say, oh, that honour killing fella, but you as a presenter, you kind of develop a sixth sense as to when people are toeing the line a bit.
Do you do that?
Yeah.
I do this to the producer.
Right.
I do that, or I do chinny chin.
I do a chinny record, yeah.
and it's not a nice thing to do. This is why I dread the cameras coming on in the studio. Yeah. It's going,
cut this thing off, get rid of it. What are you doing?
But so, well, that's what I'm like. You do develop a sixth sense, and it's the same sixth sense that tells you this is a story that they'd tell anyone who'll listen. Yeah. It's like the call, again, it's like the calls that begin, well, my child's autistic. And I often find that is someone who is not going to tell you something interesting. It's someone who just rings in so that you express, rightfully, sympathy, but you're not going to get an original. Mm. It's not the first thing you'd mention in any context. It's not the first thing you'd say.
Yeah.
In a conversation about autism or ADHD, of course it is. But if you're having a conversation about what food can't be improved by the addition of cheese, and the first thing the caller says is, my child's autistic, you kind of go, whoa, okay, that's...
No, you do.
You're asking all the questions. How do you?
I'm a professional, James.
I know
why.
You are. I know you are.
I have one too.
Well, clearly, impartiality. Because what we always talk about in commercial radio, we always make a big deal. Oh, we don't have to be impartial. We can be as racist as we like. What does that mean? How does that work?
The impartiality.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm struggling to focus because I'm desperate to know who's winning out of Clegg and Farrar.
Well,
anyone know?
Are we all?
The impartiality. I sort of have slight special dispensation in that I'm allowed to not be. I don't have to be completely impartial all the time, which again is unusual for BBC. If it comes down to a specific political thing, then yeah, I kind of have to sit on the fence a little bit, which I struggle with. Because again,
and have you got into bother? Have you been told off? Have you been offered guidance on impartiality?
I've not got into bother. I don't think I've got into any trouble while I've been at the BBC. I've had to do... I got done for libel twice, once at LBC and once Absolute. But that's,
did you? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did. I libeled someone. I libeled someone. And at Absolute, right, my boss said, right, this is going to cost us 10 grand to sort this out, okay? This is going to cost 10 grand. Because the commercial, I don't know what it's like for BBC, I'm not going to test it, but commercial will never take a libel thing to court. They'll always settle it out of court. It's going to cost 10 grand. We want you, Ian, to be financially responsible for some of this. So we're not going to tell you how much to pay. We want you to come up with a suggestion and let us know what you want to pay towards that £10,000 and... No, I just moved house. I just had a baby. I was skint.
Serious?
And I had a chat with my wife, and I phoned up my boss and said, right, I've decided I would like to contribute 1 week's salary towards this. Right. He went, is that all? I went, yeah. He said, disappointing. We're expecting a bit more. Never mind. Let's move on. And I thought, oh, blimey, you cheap.
I might not ask many questions, but when I do, I get the scoops.
Yeah. what were you asking me? Impartiality?
Yeah.
No, not really. Basically, if I find it really hard to bite my tongue, and if there's something I feel strongly about, if someone's being a massive, you know, dick for whatever reason, and it goes completely against what I believe in, I struggle to abortion. You talked about abortion.
Yeah.
There were these right wing Christians that were having protests outside an abortion clinic every day for 40 days. Nice one, guys. Let's shout and bully
on your patch.
Yeah.
Wow.
Let's bully some women who are going through a really tough traumatic time and make them feel shit about themselves. And I couldn't be impartial. I had to say to him, I thought what he was doing was disgusting and obscene. And I quite like that freshness. I find at the moment radio, there are very few exceptions, and I'll name some of the exceptions in a minute. I think radio is phone-in radio. I don't really listen to music radio. Phone-in radio is really, really bland at the moment. I think it has become homogenised. I think there are too few companies owning too many different stations. They all sound really, really similar, and a lot of the personality has gone out of radio. I really think that. The only person... ourselves to one side, the only person at the moment who I think is kind of doing really exciting personality phone-in radio is Nick Abbott. There's Nick Abbott.
And he's been doing it for 20 years.
He's been doing it forever. And he's had some patches where he's been a bit bland and has towed the line. He's the only person I think is doing something that's exciting, that is different, that is dangerous, that has got, dangerous in inverted commas,
yes,
that has got personality in there that is unlike everything else. I kind of think our shows are slightly like that as well, but I don't want to be big-headed.
No, of course.
Everything else... it's kind of, to me, it all feels a little bit same.
There's no room to make mistakes, is there?
No.
Or there's no room to try something out and it doesn't work. And there's if a management doesn't get something, it might not be your fault. It might be their fault.
Yeah.
But the more corporate the organisation, the harder.
If you lost your job tomorrow, where else could you go? Five, possibly.
When's your contract up?
I've just been extended for another year. Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
Yes. Award winner.
I wonder about this. I wonder about this at 4 o'clock in the morning, usually lying there in a cold sweat. I don't know. I wouldn't want to work necessarily anywhere else. I've had a couple of tickles, obviously, but... Five Live moving to Manchester was a big deal, and not being able to necessarily say, especially on the rare occasions that I have politicians on the program, I would find it difficult. But when you say with the Christians outside the abortion clinic, you can, can't you? You can just say, well, some people might say you're disgusting. Can you do that, or am I a bit like people on Have I Got News for You saying allegedly all the time?
Look, we're being held up a note. Do you want a heads up on who's winning out of Farage and Clegg?
Oh, shut up! Really?
Farage is winning, yeah.
Really?
Of course he's. It's on LBC, James,
yeah,
for Christ's
right.
sake.
So I knew I shouldn't
have
come
here. Listen to the
I knew I shouldn't
Ferrari's
have come here.
Ferrari's hosting it. Of course he's going to win. In an instance like that, I sort of feel like I am the crusader, and I would have to stand up and say, look, mate, you're out of order. You're going back to talking about trust, one of the things I've found... now that the act is kind of changing slightly, is that people are trusting me more.
Yes.
Two kind of phone calls I've had, I always think I'm happy for anyone to come on as a phoner, on a phoner, because I always think that everyone, if you just push them the right way, everyone's got a story about them. Everyone has got a story. And there are two examples. There's this old guy called Matt. It is Matt, isn't it? Yeah, Matt, who phones in, and he hated me. He hated me when I took over at Three Counties. Hated it. And he'd phone up. You're nothing, you're rubbish. I hate you. When are you going to leave? And he would phone up. And then over time, he would start to reveal a little bit more about his life. And it turned out his wife was really, really ill with Alzheimer's in a care home. This went on for a long time. And she died like a couple of months ago. And he phoned us up. And he said, Ian, there's not long now. She's going to die in the next couple of days. I wish she would die. I wish my wife would die. And she's talking about it. Oh, man. And this has never happened. I was in tears. I lost my dad last year. And so suddenly this is making it really real for me. It's making it real because I'm remembering my dad and what, you know, how I fucked up my relationship there. I'm feeling sorry for this guy. But also I'm humbled that this man... A has done a complete reverse from hating me to now trusting me, saying he wants his wife to die. And then when she died, he phoned up and said, you know, thanks very much. Me and the family want to say thank you for everything you did. And another caller, it was a woman called Helen in Milton Keynes who had only ever text. And we were talking about assisted suicide. And she phoned up one day to say, I've had cancer. I'm catheterized. My mum died of cancer. If the cancer ever came back, I would kill myself. I would kill myself. And I've discussed it with my kids. I'll kill myself.
Yeah.
And then 2 weeks later, she phoned up and said, the cancer's come back. And we're all... And it was... is exactly what I had. It was the first time I've ever been speechless. And I didn't know what to say. Literally didn't know what to say to her. And it was... So what are you thinking? She says, well, I'm going in for an operation. In fact, we haven't spoken to her for a while. She says, I hope she's all right. But I'm going in for an operation. If they can't fix it, then I've spoken to my family and I'm going to kill myself.
Wow.
Can
I ask you two things?
Yes.
Did the producer put that on the screen, or did you get hit?
I can't remember. Catherine, did you put that on the screen, that that was what she was going to say, or did it come out?
We said that she'd have
that.
And the other thing you were mentioning a moment ago about the hierarchy and the looking down, I think it's constant in the sort of radio that we do. You were suggesting that that maybe LBC would look down on local BBC. I don't think so. Not if you've got your head screwed on right. But no. But everyone looks down on phone and radio in our business. And that's what they don't understand. That story right there. And I've been privileged enough to have a couple like that myself. And the fun, we high-five each other for the funny stuff or for giving a bloody nose to people. But those are the moments that no other medium can do. Mm. Whether you're writing, which I've done, whether you're broadcasting on telly, which I've done, whether you're what else is there? There must be something else. Is tweeting,
podcasting.
I don't know, podcast, whatever it may be. That live and immediate moment of personal revelation, I think if you ever get blasé or bored about that, then you've become almost subhuman. Mm. I really do. This is cheery.
Shall we? You're able to ask questions if you want. So I don't know if anybody's got any questions that they'd like to ask. This is the awkward let's ask the audience for questions and nobody has any questions bit of the show. So if anybody has a question, yes, there's a gentleman there. Look, Sandy Warr is. The last time I saw you, Sandy, wasn't it some weird talent show or something at LBC? Weren't you singing or something?
Probably.
Yeah, I thought. So. Anyway, yes, go on, sir.
Hello, Alexander Bermange. Terrific talk, thank you. So I hope it's right for me to preface my question by that. You're having just said you don't like callers who preface their points with things, but terrific talk. Can you elaborate a little bit on the callers, or especially now that we have texters and tweeters, these kind of people who are often alluded to, whose texts and tweets you don't read out because they're obnoxious or horrible or something. It's something that's often alluded to, but what are these people saying? What kind of things are they saying?
Everything you can imagine. You get every kind of abuse.
Yeah, think of something absolutely unsayable and then double it. And people will... you'll get personal stuff. You have to be thick-skinned about it.
Do they say stuff about your kids?
Not so much my kids, but they have, and my wife. How thick is your skin, do you think?
It varies. It's a lot better than it was, but if I'm having a bad day, then it can really hurt me. Yeah, of course.
Can it?
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't a challenge. But I think in the last 3 years, I think I've become Teflon. I've had. I hope your wife gets cancer. I've had paedophilic suggestions about my children. Yeah. I've had my Wikipedia page adapted to say he couldn't impregnate his wife in the usual fashion, so they've had to employ IVF. And I mean, they've gone for absolutely everything. And I do two things. The first thing I do is genuinely, and this is the state of the ego you need to do this for a living. I think, wow, how big am I in their world? That is just, imagine sitting there and coming up with that. That is absolutely incredible. And that means I'm doing my job well. And the other thing I do, to refer back to our two favourite types of callers, the people I piss off the most are racists and homophobes. Mm. So I kind of think, yeah, good, carry on. Yeah. Show me your worst. But I was watching an older presenter who we both know. Not the first person who will spring into your mind. Someone who really should know better. Someone who on air seems to have the thickest skin imaginable. And seeing him after more years than we've done between us in this business, still get upset by it. I thought, I can't be like that because I'm more vulnerable than he is. I've got more in my life. So I've got to
hold a
yeah
name.
I mean, literally the stuff I've just mentioned, the cancer stuff, the paedophilic stuff. Does that surprise you or not?
It does surprise me.
There you go. Because that was a moment where seriously, these people are nuts. So now I have little folders on my email box where I've got one called Freaky Lady, because there's a lady who writes every
so have I, but for different reasons.
Every day I'll get between 30 or 40 emails off her every single day. So today, starting off with why do you mention your mum, you never go and visit her? Why do you mention your wife used to work for Sky, nobody cares? We saw you on Alan Titchmarsh last week. Why have you got such an ugly, angry face? And she gets subtler. Sometimes she's quite sort of, but that's brilliant, because they're coming in every single day, and I now wave at the producer and point at the screen when she's done a particularly good one. But it never,
because most of the time I'm all right now. But if I'm having a bad day, if something's going on at home,
I'm going to regret. But this is the point of the question: is that you do mention them on air sometimes, which I sometimes think is a sign that maybe they have got under your skin a bit. Mm. So you kind of say, I really wish you didn't know that I'd noticed you, is the closest I would come to saying that I think they'd disturbed my equilibrium.
My favourite, the kind of the phone-in version of that is people who phone up. They're not going to listen to what you say. They make their point. Right, I'm off now. Bye-bye. And
I don't give it away because that's genius. That leaves you feeling spent.
That is great, isn't it?
That is very, very clever. Or let me speak. I am letting you speak. You're talking rubbish. I can't just let you speak rubbish indefinitely. I have to interrupt as I let me speak because you know that your enemies are going, yeah, you always cut people. I don't cut people off. They hang themselves. It's not my fault. Sorry.
Anyone else? Hang on. Sandy, put your hands up high because Sandy's in charge.
Hello, Rodri from Reading.
Hello, Rodri. I saw your tweet, Rodri. Thank you for your enthusiasm. I hope it wasn't misplaced.
But where is the line? A lot of your callers are incredibly strange. Where is the line? It's true. Where is the line between having legitimate fun on the radio with someone who's a bit eccentric and exploiting someone who might have a problem for the sake of a show that's interesting?
Is that more for Ian or is that for us equally?
It's crossover. Probably for Ian, but it goes to both, really.
I've given that a lot of thought. 8 years ago, I wouldn't have cared less. If it sounds good, if it sounds funny, brilliant. But then I kind of matured, and as I've got kids, and my life experience has grown, and now I like to think I am more aware of people's mental state. So if they're nuts, if they are damaged goods, I kind of let it's really hard to explain. If they're damaged goods, I won't take the mick out of them, and I won't go for the soft target. If they're just an idiot, that's open season.
Or stupid.
Yeah, that's open season. But if during the I've had it where I'm having some fun with someone, and during the conversation that something has clicked that actually they're not all there. And
you can't put it into words, can you? It's like a sixth sense.
It is, and I've politely stepped back. 3, 4, 5 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, but I like to think that's the case for me now.
I like to think that this question wasn't intended for me at all. But just in case it was. I had one last week, and I think 30 seconds into the call, I realised she was drunk. And I had a little bit of fun. Were you listening to that one? I had a little bit of fun with her because... I mean, it was a fairly innocuous subject, and I did a gag at the end of it. I can't even remember what it was. Something about glasses being half full or half empty, and I thought afterwards, I said, you really didn't need to do that. I mean, drunkenness is self-inflicted. It's not in that context. It's not a mental illness in the way that other things are. But I did think afterwards, that was a bit cheap, mate. You really didn't need to do that.
But that's kind of growing up and maturity, isn't
it?
As I get more weapons in my arsenal that I can use, I don't need to go for the easy targets as much as I used to.
Yeah, I think you're right. And also, you know, it's not nice sometimes to witness bullying, is it?
No. Again, did you change when you had kids? How old are your kids?
Yeah,
six?
Eight, well, they're 8 and 5.
Right, because my outlook on it changed significantly once I had my first boy. It's 4 now.
I think turning 40 was a bigger deal for me than perhaps I lost my dad about 14 months ago as well, and I think that has had a bearing on that.
Yeah.
Notion of empathy and sympathy, but I don't know. I never got that many because I'm on in the mornings, and it's usually in the night times that the night people times. Come on who are fragile, and I never had you marked down as someone that would brutalise people who didn't deserve it or anything like that.
We used to have a caller, Leon. Was it Leon? Leon in Langley, who phoned you the other day? Actually,
how did he sound?
He's not well.
Okay.
He used to pretend that he claimed that he worked for the MI5 and was a spy and all this.
Was he ringing about the missing aeroplane?
Possibly, yeah. And I used to have a lot of fun with him. And I'm trying to think if he called up, and he's probably
deluded. He's genuinely deluded.
He's possibly an alcoholic.
Right.
I would say he's very damaged goods. No disrespect to him. He's a lovely gentleman.
Sure.
I would probably handle that. I've not spoken to him for about 3 or 4 years. I would handle that very, very differently now to the way I did 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I think.
Yes. Hi. Hello. Hello. Nick from Unusual Productions.
Hi, Nick.
Hello, Nick.
Ian, I know a long time ago you did some prank calls.
He prank called me once.
Did I?
Yes. And I busted you.
Oh, okay. do you ever get caught out by prank calls? Have you got a way of safeguarding against people you know who are sort of clever sods who are trying to trip you up?
They're not. They can't catch me out.
Really?
They can't. I can't get caught. I don't think I've been caught out by a prank call because I used to do it a lot before I was on the TV. I used to phone up Clive Bull a lot and just wind him up and his experts. I'm pretty good at knowing when we had a prank call the other day, and I knew it was because there's just little things they just leave. Not Steve. We had this kid called Steve phone up who claimed he was a sports teacher. He's talking like that. I'm going on strike next week. All right, Steve. And how long did you study PE for at university?
10 years.
So he'd done muscly studies and everything. But normally, the prank callers, normally they just like, they'll leave a... I know when people are going to swear because they'll leave a gap. People very rarely come on and swear straight away. They'll leave a gap as they're building up, they're psyching up to it, and then I can kind of get rid of them. I don't think I've ever been caught out. And if I did get caught out, if it was a good one, then good luck to them. But the prank call seems to have died.
Yeah, since you started working for the BBC. Yeah.
Well, yes, it's kind of died a death.
You got a Yorkshire accent or something with me, and you, I can't remember. It's on YouTube if you want to dig it out.
Did I really do that?
Yeah, you did.
And I was working at LBC.
Hang on a minute, you're Ian Lee. Oh, but your prank calls to late night television competitions are a thing of legend.
If you're bored, go to YouTube and look up "Is it Ghostbusters 2?"
You will cry with laughter.
Do you know what? I just split up with a girlfriend of 8 years, and so I was very, very lonely. And it cost me about 500 quid.
And the presenter kept saying to you, "She kept saying to you, you do realise this is costing you money, don't you?"
Yeah.
Anyway, there's a treat for you though if you haven't encountered it before. Yes, of course. Lady in the front row here.
Hi, this one's for James, because your show is sort of part of my day. And
thank you.
The psychology of it just fascinates me, because it becomes part of your day and you listen to it over and over. And the people that, the racists and the homophobes, and why do they listen to you every day? If they don't like your politics. And it just fascinates me that these people listen to you and listen to you and listen to you and come back to you and come back to you and come back to you, when they're obviously... I don't understand why they spend so much time listening to you if you're so against what they believe in. How do you see them like that?
Oddly, one thing we haven't touched on this evening is what makes a good phone-in host or what makes a good phone-in caller. And I realised on the way here I don't know. And the reason I don't know is because there are presenters I really admire and understand the appeal of who have politics that I find repugnant. So I think it's a bit like being good company, actually. So even if they hate you and they don't realise it, they do enjoy your company. It would be the simplest way I can think of putting it. And oddly, the people who hate you the most are the people who listen to you the most. I mean, in terms of the really obsessive listener, the ones who say, "I never listen to that lefty James O'Brien. He's absolutely disgusting and he never lets a caller get a word in edgeways." For example, at 11:37 on Tuesday, 12:04 on Wednesday, 10:17 on Monday, and in 2009, I distinctly... And you sort of think that's the kind of person who's boycotting me that I can live with. You know, I don't know what you'd call it. A sort of grim fascination. It's a great question, though. And not knowing the answer is part of the joy of getting out of bed every morning.
I wanted to ask about callers, because you tend to get regular callers in, some of them, you know. Callers you think, you ever tempted or ever done, "I'm not giving this guy a voice"? Because I'm sure there's people that pop up and, you know, you've heard him a few times and you pretty much know where it's going to go.
Jeffrey and Bracknell stroke Ascot. Does he call you?
The thing is, other presenters let them on, mate, because they're not getting any calls.
Yeah.
So, and that is like throwing them a bone for another 3 months. So you can, people who are just boring, love the sound of their own voice, have absolutely nothing to say. If you can't get a job in radio, as Ian and I have been lucky enough to do, then you shouldn't be, and unfortunately, because the nature of the beast is that we're all terrified of silence, these people get on. But if I've got regular callers, they're regular by accident. They happen to have something interesting to say on maybe one subject a fortnight rather than any. But you still get the calls, and you're right. I mean, you do say, "Well, we'll only take that if we need it," because I know exactly what he's going to say. Yeah. You know, nor some of them, though, at the moment, they're getting on every bloody day on some of them.
I'm not afraid of there being no calls. My first ever, apart from the 2 weeks where I was filling in for Clive, my first ever shift at LBC when I had the gig was it was Christmas Eve. And it was a 3-hour slot, 10 till 1 at night, and it was me and Chris producing. Chris had never produced, I'd never done my own phone-in show. We had 3 calls for 3 hours, and it was a real baptism of fire. So I'm never afraid of silence.
And that's the best lesson.
Yeah,
I fear of silence, just from the point of view of if you're doing a single topic for an hour, which you weren't doing then,
no.
And if you're re-churning it, and it hasn't happened to me for years, it's going to happen tomorrow, isn't it? It's just work. The idea of having to re-churn again means you're doing everything wrong, but that's the point, actually, because even when you're doing everything wrong and you're not making engaging radio and you've got the wrong question and you're not giving anything to the people listening, these chug nuts are still ringing in their droves, and they're the people that I don't think you ever really want on the wireless. But that's a very personal perspective, and other radio presenters are perfectly entitled to let the same callers on every day.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm called Rachel. I work in music radio, and I find myself more and more interested in talk radio and thinking about working in it. But I wonder if there's some middle ground between can you still get fruit polos and immigration, you know, a kind of like, is there some, I wish there was a bit more joy in talk radio, and yeah. I don't mean, you know, banal fluff.
Do you listen to us?
Yeah.
Oh.
No, but you know,
I thought that was joyous.
Oh boy.
And no, you're both great at what you do.
But it's
not you. It's the callers. It's the machine.
Yeah.
It's the whole. It's just. It's negative. It's black. It's like, do you like this or do you hate it? It's not on every show and every topic, but the driving force for me listening.
Mm.
And I just want. I'd like a little bit more intelligence, and I don't mean like Radio 4 intelligence. I don't know if that thing can or should exist.
The microphone's not working, but I like you're still holding it there.
I know. I made a gesture.
Give me a question, because I'm getting your point, but I don't quite know what I can say to it, apart from, yeah, I get your point.
Well, and I don't really know, so maybe there isn't an answer to it, but I listen to it and I'm thinking, and I'm also thinking, maybe I could do a show that has that thing, but then I don't know what that thing is.
If it's listener-generated, then you don't have the level of control that you seek. So you can ask the most intelligent question you want, and a lot of the criticism I get is, who does he think he's on Radio 4? This is LBC. So, I'd get more jip for being, quotes, too up myself than I do for being too down market. But you can't control it. You can't, in a way, control it. You can get frustrated with people, but I recognise what you describe, but obviously not entirely successfully. I try every single day to defy the stereotype that you've just described, and I think you do as well.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with what you're saying to a certain extent. I like to think when I get it right that we kind of get that mix of weighty stuff and, you know, messing around. But there aren't that many outlets. Again, I go back to Nick Abbott. Do you ever listen to Nick Abbott?
Listen to
Nick Abbott, because he kind of treads that line really, really well. And he can... what I like about Nick is the way... Sorry, James, you've been...
Checking the tweets. I'm just checking. You've been doing really good tweets tonight.
We're having a little...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
My phone doesn't get the internet, so... one of the things I like Nick is because he doesn't make a big thing about the callers. He's not always going, give us a call. I'll wait 4 or 5. Call me now. He's not always doing that. He'll just be talking about something and then go, oh, we've got Steve and Ealing. Steve will join the conversation, then Steve will go and Nick will carry on. And there's something more relaxed. I think you might enjoy Nick Abbott.
And again, that's a time of day thing, because you wouldn't get away with that at 10 o'clock in the morning. You get away with it at 10 o'clock at night.
You were a little.
It's too late now, Rachel. It's all right. No, it's all right. You fill your boots.
I know.
And also, oddly, the callers who haven't actually got something black and white to say can be the most boring callers of all. Well, on the other hand, James, of course, I suppose if you see it like that, you're, what the hell have you rung me for?
Last one.
Make it a good one. Pressure's on.
Oh, now I feel under a lot of pressure. My name's Matt. I'm actually going to be at LBC next week for work experience.
Excellent.
I was interested in how you blend together the different kind of points of view that are coming into your shows. Because sometimes there's a need, I think, maybe just to switch arguments a little bit, just to generate a little bit more calls on the other side of an argument. And if you've got something to say about that, I'd be interested in how you judge that. I was thinking, James, about the BBC licence fee stuff that you were doing this week.
Yes.
And sometimes you kind of shift a little bit just to kind of test their arguments. And where do you stand on, do you flip completely or is it better to...
You can't, so you're...
Keep a point of view.
Your introduction will involve your position. And then the callers who ring in to endorse your position have to be challenged as well, is sort of what you mean. I think that's all, I hate this word, but I think that's organic. I think that is just, and we've been very good tonight. I think we've been very modest, which is hard for people who do what we do for a living.
Yes.
Which is part of the reason why we do what we do for a living. But I think that's what makes you half decent as a presenter, is the fact that that sort of thing comes very naturally. Because one of the first things Ian said this evening was caller after caller after caller agreeing with you is, what was that, Wednesday's show? Was
it? Yes.
Tuesday's at Dolesville, Tennessee. And so you recognise that instinctively and you think, all right, no one's actually going to disagree with me, so I'm now going to do the really mean thing and rip apart someone who's rung in to agree with me. And that's quite a helpful, that's quite a good skill to have. And if you've got it, you're a decent, I think, a decent
Yeah, owner. But I don't like to fake the argument.
No,
to
rip
take...
apart is the wrong way to describe it, but just point out flaws in their thinking.
Yeah.
So you're not taking the argument to them. You're saying, well, hang on a minute, and I like to do it in a personal way. So I would like to say something like, well, what if this happened? So
yeah.
When we were talking about Russia and Crimea and people are ringing in to condemn the coverage and say, well, Russia, why can't Russia do it? We did this. And I didn't really know what to think about it. But if you say something, odd though it sounds, you take a call from May DeVale, and I say, well, it's a democratic vote. The people of Crimea have voted democratically to break away from Russia. And I say, well, what if there was an influx of Swedish people into May DeVale and they all had a vote and decided they wanted to be independent from London and become part of Britain? Those little things. It's a flippant argument, but it takes it back to them and means I'm now arguing from the opposite of the position I was endorsing without sounding like I'm faking anything.
Yeah.
It's just
yeah.
I suppose have a little think about what are you coming in to do, AP?
No, I think it's just general kind of news reporting.
Oh, cool. Okay. You'll be fine.
You will be fine. It's a lovely place. I think that's. That means we finished.
Is that the wheels on the bus go round and round?
Oh, look, last question.
No, see, I'm in trouble because I said to the chap up there I couldn't take his question because I'd already called the last one. All right, then, let's... Apologies, then, to the gentleman
I was just... It's all going to kick off.
Is it working? Yes.
Is that it?
Very quick, it's a comment, really, to Jake. Unfortunately, because I work, I don't get to listen to you very often.
Aww.
But I was off sick a few weeks ago. It was the day that it was announced that Prunella Scales had early onset Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
I just want to say, those three calls that you took had me in tears. And one of the most moving things I have heard on radio. And I think that's what talk radio is all about. Because I think talking to you helped those people as well. And from somebody, from my perspective, who's had a lot of experience of Alzheimer's, it helped me to know you're not alone. And I'll never forget that guy who was going to give up his house and go and live and look after his mother.
Mm.
And I thought, how can you do that? But hats off. So congratulations.
Well,
that's what it's all about.
That seems a perfect note to end on.
Thank you very much. It does.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Lee!
Yeah. James O'Brien from the radio!